Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Wednesday the 24th of August, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll find out about some upcoming advocacy workshops offered by AWARE with Swaroopa Top and Mandy O'Neill Cole. We'll also get a lesson on statistics with Susan Power, and Betty Kapler will be here to talk about this Saturday's fundraising dinner and auction for Helping Hands. That Writer's Almanac Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, numerous showers diminishing overnight with low temperatures around 47 degrees. Forecast for Thursday looks like mostly cloudy skies with high temperatures around 57 degrees. Forecast for Thursday night, rain developing later on with low temperatures around 49 degrees. Forecast for Friday looks like rain.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native people are among those to experience the earthquake which shook Washington, D.C. Tuesday. April Hale is with the National American Indian Housing Council. She says their office is right behind Union Station.
When I felt the shaking in my office, I thought, and the rumbling, I thought, oh my goodness, a train is going to come barreling through my office window. And then I realized that it was an earthquake once I looked up at my walls and the ceiling and saw it swaying back and forth.
Hale says many people were in shock about what had happened.
There were people just coming out of our building, out of their suites and with eyes huge and asking each other if that was actually an earthquake.
Her colleague Bernadette Echohawk used to live on the West Coast and has experienced small and large earthquakes. She says living in the Los Angeles area, she's read many articles about earthquakes but never expected to experience one in the D.C. area.
There are some fault lines, you know, in the East Coast, that can cause earthquakes, but they're just very, very rare. But another thing I strongly remember reading was the fact that due to the geological makeup of the East Coast versus the West Coast, any kind of earthquake will resonate farther on the East Coast than it will in the West. And I think we clearly saw that yesterday.
The National Museum of the American Indian was evacuated and closed Tuesday afternoon. Leonda Lovechuk is the public affairs officer at the museum.
I just happened to be at the water fountain filling up my water bottle, and I could start feeling the wall shaking, and I really thought there was maybe construction going on behind the wall that I didn't know about, but it got to the point where it was really, really moving, and you could feel it under your feet.
A full sweep of collections was done, and the museum is open today. Indian Affairs and other employees at the Department of the Interior were also evacuated. The Interior Department building remains closed today. First Nations people are among those protesting an oil pipeline project. People are gathered outside the White House gates. They're expected to stay there for the next 2 weeks. Opponents believe the pipeline could negatively impact Indigenous communities and the environment. According to the organization, the Tar Sands Action, First Nations actress Tantu Cardinal was among 60 people arrested this week at the protest. The actress, known for her roles in Legends of the Fall, Dances with Wolves, and Smoke Signals, said in a press release, it's about protecting land, water, and climate, and the tar sands destruction has to stop. Opponents are calling on the Obama administration to reject a permit for the Keystone Pipeline Project, which would deliver Canadian tar sands oil to markets in the United States. Supporters point to the project bringing in energy and jobs. Federal education officials are spending time in South Dakota this week. They plan to show President Obama's commitment to quality Native education. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
The Federal Department of Education's Director for Tribal Initiatives for Colleges and Universities, William Mendoza, appeared at Oglala Lakota College in South Dakota today. He, South Dakota Director of Indian Education Roger Campbell, and six tribal college presidents from across the U.S. discussed Native education and the president's commitment to Native education. They've also been spending time previewing an upcoming visit from the Federal Secretary of Education, Arnie Duncan. He's expected to spend time Friday discussing what the president has planned to improve tribal education opportunities, and he'll visit schools in Rosebud and Mission, South Dakota. Duncan is also giving the graduation address at Sinte Gleska University. Sinte Gleska, Oglala Lakota, and Sisseton and Wahpeton are South Dakota's three tribal colleges. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
During this month in 1965, the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indians was organized by an act of Congress. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding by the Washington, D.C., Albuquerque, and Alaska law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxby, Anderson, Miller, and Munson. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTLO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First guest here from Aware to talk about some advocacy training workshops which are coming up in the next month here. Swaroop Patop and Mandy O'Neill Cole. Thank you very much for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
So first of all, who wants to tell me a little bit about Aware for the people in the audience who don't know what it is?
I'll take that one. The first thing I want to say about Aware is that it is a wonderful place. It's a wonderful place and a wonderful service. Aware is both a shelter for women and children who have experienced victimization and kind of a peace of mind for a lot of people in the community who've also experienced some level of victimization or have loved ones who have been impacted by domestic violence and sexual assault. So Aware is a building and a spirit. And I think the thing that most people associate with Aware when they first hear of it is our residential shelter. And we have a 48-bed shelter, and we provide nights of safety for women and children. Last year, I believe in the last year, we provided over 4,814 shelter nights to women and children here in Juneau. Some of those women and children are from the outlying rural areas like Hoonah and Tinicky Springs, places like that, but the vast majority of them are from right here in Juneau.
And I wanted to add also to what Mandy's saying, there's an emergency response team that is comprised of Aware staff members. So we also show up at the hospital if a woman is raped or abused, and 24/7, anytime, night or day, and we work with her. We have a legal advocate who also helps guide us and such like that. And there are many prevention programs that come out of Aware as well. AWARE stands for Aiding Women in Abuse and Rape Emergencies, and we do. We feel the building is a very safe place. Many people ask us if men are served there, and we do serve men as well, even though it's not in our title. 99.9% of the abuse that comes forward to us is women, but we have served men, and we don't house them at AWARE, but we will house them. So I just thought, just to be completely 360-degree point of view about what AWARE does.
Sure, and what is the advocate's role?
Well, an advocate is a really important person in the shelter. It's the person who helps women and children be comfortable in this space that is sometimes a difficult transition for them. Advocates help debrief and do some crisis intervention counseling with women and children. Advocates take care of the safety and maintenance of the building, which is a really big job. It's a safe, secure shelter, so we have a lot of security measures in place, and advocates are responsible for making sure that our security is tight and that we have good response to any kind of potential issues that may come up. So they have a huge responsibility at AWARE.
One of the things that the advocacy training offers and what AWARE offers that I haven't really found anywhere else is the spirit of advocacy, which is empowerment for women and children and men who come for our services. We don't tell anyone what to do. Lord knows most of them have been told all of their lives what to do, or at least in that last relationship what to do. We as advocates really sit and listen and bring our expertise in terms of knowing other agencies, other options, other resources, and as Mandy was saying, you know, really being able to be present with people who are experiencing trauma. It's a beautiful strength, and it's what gives AWARE and the men and the women who work at AWARE and volunteer at AWARE a real sense of centeredness and an actual ability to help someone. And that's what I think this training has to offer. A lot of times we want to help somebody, and we don't really know how, a friend or a coworker or a loved one, and we sense that there's something, there's the burden of the world on their shoulders, and we don't know how to talk about it, we don't know how to offer help. And this training really helps anybody who wants to work or volunteer at AWARE, or if they're in one of the sister agencies, or if you're a community member who's just really interested in knowing how to help someone. It really shows you how to center yourself and what your point of view can be to actually offer help.
And the training starts on September 8th and goes through the 14th with the first part anyway. And it is divided into two parts. Do you want to talk about the two parts of the training, Mandy?
Sure, although that is actually Swarupa's area of expertise.
Let me rephrase that question. You want to talk about that training, Swarupa?
Funny you should ask, Jeff. The first part of the training is a lot of foundational information, because really, it's not often a popular topic. You don't find people saying, well, what do you think domestic violence is? And how does sexual assault really happen? What is child abuse? So these are challenging topics, and there's a lot to be learned around the topics, a lot of surprising information about what causes it and the relationship to substance abuse and domestic violence. It's pretty surprising. And the oppression that we experience, or how we can lift ourselves up from it, that comes from society itself and the media. The first part also talks a lot about the solutions. What are AWARE services? We have a panel of other service members like the police, the hospital, housing, the city attorney's office. We have a panel of people like that who will come together, and you can ask questions about how we all work together to create a more safe intimacy, peacefulness in our community.
I think that Swarupa is being modest when she talks about how how wonderful her training is, because, you know, some of the feedback that I've gotten from really kind of with it professionals around town is that they were really amazed by some of the information and the caliber of information we're able to present in the first half of the training. You know, and it's not the nuts and bolts at that point of what to do when you sit inside the building. It's really, why is it important to listen? And I know for me, it took me a good, you know, 7 or 8 years, I think, probably, to learn how to listen without trying to problem solve, without trying to, you know, get at what I thought was the heart of the matter. And this training really helps people focus on being there for another person, and that's really special. I don't know where else you would get a training like that.
What are some of the topics offered in the training, in the first part, anyway, which I guess is open to the general public for the first part?
It is. It's open to the public, and we begin with the foundation, the history of the battered women's movement, the firm foundations of domestic violence, and the firm foundations of sexual assault, some of the legal movements that have happened since the 70s, the effects of violence on brain development of children by Linda Chamberlain on a recorded discussion and presentation that she made that's just amazing. Patty Bland from the Alaska Network, who does national trainings, will really make a clear distinction about domestic violence and substance abuse, really important information. Mandy O'Neill Cole will peel away what it is to be an advocate. So her 7 or 8 years of discovery will really be honed down. What is advocacy? And then anti-oppression, like I was saying. We have the panel that will respond to questions about how we all work together. We hear a lot about our prevention services, so that people will walk away knowing how AWARE works and how this is really something that community members should own. They walk in, learn about the place, and make it their own, because there's a lot of resource there. And then part two is where the rubber meets the road. It's more hands-on, more interactive. We begin to make safety plans together. We do some role modeling, and this is when people really want to. Sometimes students will participate on this, but definitely staff and volunteer at AWARE, people who would like to become an advocate. It also talks about child abuse and mandatory reporting. The emergency response team that I was telling you about gets trained here at least the first part and as well as future advocates. This is the part one, really, of the beginning of their training that goes hands-on at AWARE. And we're really proud to have Jeremy Seth, who comes in and does a beautiful presentation on cultural competency, which is one of the highlights of part two. And then the ever-important compassion fatigue, which is how we all learn to listen, take it in, the trauma of the person that we're working with, and process it with them so that we're all, the restart button is hit, and we're strong and healthy to be able to help other people. It's crucial, or we just can't do it. You just burn out. And one of the beautiful things about AWARE is most of our staff has been there for 5 years or more, which is beautiful.
How do you teach appropriate compassion?
We both have ideas.
I teach the offender program, which, you know, SORPA didn't mention that in the training, although I do a presentation on it. So while AWARE provides services for victims, we also provide some services for offenders, so perpetrators of domestic violence. And so I teach that program. And the way I teach empathy and compassion in that context is a little different than maybe what SORPA will tell you about in a second, I'm sure. But one of the things I think is so important when talking about and learning about compassion and empathy is to recognize what you bring to the situation. So what I always have men do, whether they work with me or they're in the program, is really look at what they're bringing in. What are their barriers? What are their filters? What are the things that they've brought with them that enables them to interpret the way people say and the things people say and the way they behave to them? And so the way I teach compassion and empathy is to really focus on the relationship you have with yourself first. And I think that's critical, you know, that we can talk all day about how, and I can give someone a script about how to talk respectfully to another person, but ultimately, if there's anything blocking the relationship you have with yourself, you're not going to be able to enter into an authentic relationship with another person.
Yeah, and from I think what makes AWARE feel so special to us is that we have practiced compassion and listening to trauma in a way that really does help to process the trauma. And you have to have a flexible and strong heart. So when Mandy says you're listening, you're not only listening with your ears, but you're fully present. And you're even reflecting back to the other person to make sure that you're understanding what they're trying to convey. Also, as Mandy was saying, as an advocate, I have to listen to what's coming up for me and be really honest with myself and say, look, you know, I'm having a reaction to this. I need to step away for a moment and come back in. So it really strengthens your heart to listen to somebody who's just been through a trauma. And you get better and better at it. But that intimacy, peacefulness, it really comes from making sure that your relationship with yourself is really honest and your relationship with the other person is also based on reality. You're hearing what they're saying. You're reflecting back and asking. We handed out little cards. I wish I had one now at the governor's picnic where he had us as a part of his Choose Respect initiative handout. I Choose Respect. Bracelets, and we had little cards that said exactly that. How do you engender true listening and respect for another person? And I think he chose a really good slogan, Choose Respect, because as Mandy was saying, when you have that relationship with yourself, when you have self-respect, you have a firm foundation to which you can offer respect and listen to another person and empathize.
I'm talking to Swaroop Patath and Mandy O'Neill Cole about the advocacy training, which is offered from AWARE, through AWARE, and it's happening starting on September 8th and goes through the 14th for the first part, and then the 17th through the 22nd is the second part. So quite a commitment. What kind of a commitment do you expect from your volunteers?
Total.
That's good.
We have high expectations, which are always met, I have to say.
We have awesome, awesome volunteers who have been volunteering for 15 years. I mean, people feel that AWARE is a pretty special place, and I invite people to come in and check it out. Sometimes people feel like they don't know where it is, or, you know, it is a shelter and it is a crisis center, but there's also the administrative side. And people, we'd love to show it because we do feel like it has a, it's kind of like a heart. You know, a lot of toxins come in, some bad blood, and it comes out all purified and oxygenated. People can check out the schedule and the agenda that I just read to you on our website, www.awareak.org. That's awareak.org. Or give us a call at 586-6623 to register.
And we kind of made a little joke about expecting total commitment, but we are also a bunch of, you know, of the most flexible people you will ever meet. So if you have a schedule that prevents you from taking one or more portions of this, talking with Sarupa really about what you can make it to is totally appropriate, and we really encourage people to do that.
And a phone number?
586-6623.
Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Totally off the topic, the Women Distinction nomination forms are available online. And so if you know some awesome woman in your life who's been doing all this great work, either in front of or behind the scenes, and you want her to get out and tell her Shiro story, Women of Distinction, due September the 27th. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Nothing is going right.
Carol King. The time is 3:26, and you are attuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Sarah Power from the Department of Fish and Game here to talk about statistics. Sarah, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
So I asked you because the next week there's a couple of sessions going on as far as statistics go from the Alaska chapter for the American Statistics Association. Tell me first what the American Statistics Association is and then the Alaska chapter, what would you do?
The American Statistical Association is a group of statisticians around America and beyond, and they're statisticians that work in all sorts of fields. Here in Alaska, we have a lot that work in natural resources as well as human resources, anywhere where you have data that needs interpreting.
And the first thing you learn is how to say statistics without jumping over it.
That's a good skill to have.
Why are statistics important?
Statistics is important because it helps us interpret data. And being knowledgeable about statistics is important because it helps us understand what other people's findings are.
What kind of work do you do here in Alaska as far as statistics go?
I work for Fish and Game in Sport Fish. So I help to enumerate fish and see what returns are coming back and see how management policies are working and give managers tools so that they can manage the resource.
So is the job of statistics to kind of remove the mumbo-jumbo and get it down to hard facts, or is it?
Yeah, having hard facts makes managers, it gives them something to work with as opposed to opinions and feelings. It gives them something to really work with to manage the resource. And so far in Alaska, we've been fortunate, and the managers are doing a really good job.
What about the accusation that some people use some statistics have been there, been around to suit their own needs?
I think that's a good reason why people need to be aware and informed about statistics. I know whenever I read a study or I see especially an ad campaign coming up with elections going on, I really look at the words they're using and how they're saying it and try to discern what they're not telling you. And you can do that by listening to them, but you can also go back and look into anybody's research. If they have real research, you should be able to look back at their numbers to help interpret them.
My favorite comment is there are three kinds of people in the world, those that could count and those that can't.
I like that one, too. I have that on my door.
Tell me about the meeting that you're having next Monday and Tuesday, and then the one that's more or less open to the public on Wednesday.
Yeah. On Monday and Tuesday, we're having a short course. It's short because it's only 2 days long, but it's also taught by Dr. Short, who is from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And she's teaching us a course on spatial statistics.
What are spatial statistics?
That has to do with statistics that's locationally based. So an example for me might be with fish, they occur in certain areas. For a geologist, it might be, you know, that gold is in a certain area and you want to quantify it or find it or try to extrapolate what else might be there.
Mm-hmm. And you break out into individual sessions to come up and develop projects?
On Monday and Tuesday, it's mostly a learning situation with Dr. Short. She'll be lecturing, and she'll also be helping students if they have individual, or participants if they have individual data sets they want to work with. And then on Wednesday, we'll have a few different people giving presentations. And the short course is full, but on Wednesday, our meeting is still open.
Is there a fee for that?
There is a fee, and information for that can be found on our website. If you Google the Alaska chapter of the ASA, so that's the Alaska chapter of the American Statistical Association, you'll come up with a page and you can look at registration details.
All right, Sarah Power, thank you very much for coming down. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, thank you for having us. And if there are statisticians out there that aren't a member of the ASA or would be interested in joining our chapter, they can check out the webpage.
I guess, what are the golden rules of doing statistics?
One of the golden rules? Well, the nice thing about being a statistician is you never have to say you're certain about anything.
All right, Sarah Power, thank you very much for coming down to the station.
All right, thank you, Jeff.
You can't take 3 from 2. 2 is less than 3, so you look at the 4 in the tens place. Now that's really 4 tens, so you make it 3 tens, regroup, and you change the tens to 10 ones, and you add them to the 2 and get 12, and you take away 3, that's 9. Is that clear? Now instead of 4 in the tens place, you've got 3 because you added 1, that is to say 10 to the 2, but you can't take 7 from 3, so you look in the hundreds place. From the 3, you then use 1 to make 10 ones, and you know why 4 plus minus 1 plus 10 is 14 minus 1, because addition is commutative, right? And so you got 13 tens, and you take away 7, and that leaves 5. Well, 6, actually, but... the idea is the important thing. Now go back to the hundreds place. You're left with 2, and you take away 1 from 2, and that leaves... Everybody get 1? Not bad for the first day. Hooray for new math! New math! It won't do you a bit of good to review math. It's so simple, so very simple, that only a child can do it. Now that actually is not the answer that I had in mind, because the book that I got this problem out of wants you to do it in base 8. But don't panic. Base 8 is just like base 10, really, if you're missing 2 fingers. Shall we have a go at it? Hang on. You can't take 3 from 2. 2 is less than 3, so you look at the 4 in the 8s place. Now that's really 4 8s, so you make a 3 8s, regroup, and you change an 8 to 8 ones, and you add to the 2, and you get 1 2 base 8, which is 10 base 10, and you take away 3, that's 7. Okay? Now instead of 4 in the 8s place, you've got 3 because you added 1, that is to say 8, to the 2, but you can't take 7 from 3, so you look at the 64s. 64. How did 64 get into it? I hear you cry. Well, 64 is 8 squared, don't you see? When you ask a silly question, you get a silly answer. From the 3, you then use 1 to make 8 ones. You add those 1s to the 3, and you get 1 3 base 8, or in other words, in base 10, you have 11, and you take away 7, and 7 from 11 is 4. Now go back to the 64s. You're left with 2, and you take away 1 from 2, and that leaves... Now, let's not always see the same hands. One, that's right. Whoever got 1 can stay after the show and clean the erasers. Hooray for new math. It won't do you a bit of good to review math. It's so simple, so very simple, that only a child can do it. Come back tomorrow night. We're going to do fractions.
Magic of Tom Lehrer. The time is 3:34, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are Roxanne Thomas and Betty Kepler here to talk about the Helping Hands Dinner and Auction coming up this Saturday from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Valley Chapel. First of all, thank you very much for being on the station today with me.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Tell me about Helping Hands, if you could, please.
So Helping Hands is a food bank that Betty Kepler established many years ago. She started it out of her car. I remember when I was a small child, she would go around and get milk and day-old bread and donuts and things like that, and she began delivering it to those in need. And it just began growing and growing, and she'd get a warehouse and just bigger, and now she has this huge warehouse and just serves so many people in need in Juneau. And it's really something I'm just very proud of her and all the hard work she puts in there.
About how many families are helped during the course of a year?
A year, probably monthly, about close to 500 or 500 a month.
And what do you do the utmost? Is it food?
Yeah.
dairy, a lot of different kinds of bread, a lot of produce, some organic even. Really some nice high-quality food, really.
And you're having an auction coming up this Saturday from 5 to 8 p.m. along with the fundraising dinner. Tell me what's on the dinner menu, if you could, please.
Oh, my gosh. It's kind of unbelievable, really, especially for the price. Betty, many people here in town know Betty Kapler for years and know what an excellent cook she is. And everything is homemade. Turkey, ham, meatballs, vegetable lasagna, mashed potatoes, and those are homemade mashed potatoes, not instant. Vegetables, homemade dinner rolls, an assortment of pies, all homemade, dessert, salad. I mean, you just absolutely couldn't go away hungry at all. It's an impressive menu and a really great time.
And how much does it cost to get in?
It's $10, really, and I think for the quality of food and quantity, you know, $10 is a great bargain, but really it's an evening of entertainment. The auction is so lively, so much fun. People are, you know, arguing back and forth and auctioning and, you know, bidding against each other and having these little wars, and it's just really a night of really just fun entertainment, really.
What are some of the items on the auction block?
So we have a lot of auctions, and first I'd like to say that the items really start from a few dollars on up, so everybody will have the opportunity to be able to buy something, really. And there are like a Skagway package for two on Wings of Alaska. It comes with a car rental, a night at the Bed and Breakfast. There's a Hanes trip for two on Wings of Alaska, includes golf and a night stay. And this is my personal favorite. I took this. I purchased this 1 year. It's a Tenneke package for two on Alaska Seaplanes and a night in a lodge. And it was really a fabulous time there. And then there's a Wings Airway for two at the Taku Lodge, that trip. And then there's so many other just individual things. You know, there's a family pass for the tram, zip line, oil changes. There's auto repair certificates. You need something, you know, to fix your car, you know, really practical things as well as really fun things. Restaurants, bed and breakfast, tire changes, you know, oil changes. You know, so if your budget isn't really allowing really travel or things like that, some really practical things that you use every, you know, all the time anyway. So hotel, whale watching, you know, beautiful clocks, just all, anything you can really imagine.
And this is all happening this Saturday from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Valley Chapel. For people who do not know, where is the Valley Chapel?
So it's off Back Loop Road. It's actually very near Montana Creek Road, but on the opposite side of the street.
Sounds good. All right. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Just everybody come out. Bring the family. It's a fun environment. You know, it's great food, really fun, and it really supports, you know, the hungry here in Juneau. So.
If people can't make it, is there an address you want to give me that people would mail donations to?
You want to give that, Betty?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you want to give the address?
Yeah, for the church?
No, to mail in donations.
Oh, we're at Schweitzer Rec Hall, and we'll be there all day Saturday, Friday, and they can bring them to the church on Saturday if they like. So, and the address of the church is 9741 Mini Hall Loop Road. It's right across from Montana Creek Road out there. And we'll be there from 10 o'clock on Saturday.
And just to add the food bank, just in case anybody finds themselves need a little bit of edge to kind of help them make it through the month, is Tuesday and Friday for 5:30 to 7 o'clock. And, you know, we give out a lot of really good quality food. So if you find yourself in need, come on by.
Roxanne Thomas and Betty Kapler, thank you very much for coming by the station here and talking about the Helping Hands Dinner and Auction coming up this Saturday from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Valley Chapel. Thank you very much for coming down.
Thanks
for
the opportunity.
Thank you for having us. Yep.
Look at those hands, they're baby's hands. dimpled and fat like a pillow. May they grow up to be strong as an oak and as graceful as a willow. Oh Lord, what will they do? I'm asking you, will they bake bread or play the fiddle? For all I know, they will build a new world while I am grown and brittle. Little hands, little hands, what are you gonna do? Today you belong.
The Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 24th of August, 2011. It's the baptismal day of the poet Robert Herrick, 1591, who gave us the lines, "Gather ye rosebuds while ye may, old time is still a-flying, and this same flower that smiles today, tomorrow will be dying." Author of short lyric poems and songs, he wrote about seducing women and taking advantage of your youth, but he never married, and most of the women in his poems were probably imaginary. It was on this date in 1349, 6,000 Jews died in the town of Mainz, Germany, after they were accused of causing the plague known as the Black Death. There were apocalyptic epidemics in the 14th century, bubonic and pneumonic and septicemic plagues that wiped out an estimated 20 million people, about a third of the population, in just 3 years, between 1347 and 1350. Over a three-month period in 1349, 600 people died a day in Vienna, 800 in Paris. The plague would rage for 3 to 6 months, and then it would seem to go away, no rhyme or reason to it. It might kill everyone on one side of the street and leave the other side untouched. People blamed the epidemic on a planetary alignment, on an earthquake that might have released noxious vapors or the wrath of God, and they also blamed the Jews, accusing them of poisoning the water, trying to destroy Christendom. They began torturing people to obtain confessions from them, and in Mainz, the Jewish community mounted a resistance, and so they were attacked with a vengeance. We now know that the plague was caused by a bacillus spread through flea bites, which came by ship across the Black Sea on the bodies of rats from Central Asia. It was on this day, 1891, Thomas Edison filed patents for the first motion picture camera and viewer. He called the camera the kinetograph, and the viewer was the kinetoscope. You looked through a peephole, and a revolving cylinder showed you illuminated photographs in rapid succession. It's the birthday of the poet and short story writer Jorge Luis Borges, born in Buenos Aires, 1899. He became the director of the National Library of Buenos Aires and found he could do his work in just 1 hour every morning, spend the rest of the day wandering through the stacks. And by a cruel twist of fate, he began losing his vision. By 1955, he was completely blind. He said, "I speak of God's splendid irony in granting me at once 800,000 books and darkness." Here's a poem for today by Charles W. Pratt, Valediction. Now the bumbling bees that hover over loveliness in flower, important with their store of pollen, have had their hour. Time has come for you to shed your silken petals and declare whether you are apple, cherry, plum, or pear. And all summer take your pleasure, nourishing the ripening fruit with the sun and rain you welcome through leaf, through root. Wrote Charles W. Pratt in Valediction. From the box marked Some Are Missing, New and Selected Poems. Published by Hobblebush Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, where your mobile device can turn into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app. You can find it online at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith and written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, part 3 of Where the River Matanuska Flows highlights the stories of the early colonists of the Matanuska Valley. Then, in 1926, Yupik prospector Walter Smith was searching for gold in a remote stretch of hills along Alaska's far western Bering Sea coast. Instead of gold, he uncovered one of the largest platinum deposits in North America. That's Platinum Dreams at 9. Watch these programs and more tonight on 360 North.
Juno's own singer-songwriter Buddy Tabor is performing in concert on Saturday, August 27th at 7:30 at Resurrection Lutheran Church. Opening will be Jim and Martha Staggs. Don't miss this Alaska Folk Festival event, Buddy Tabor in concert on Saturday, August 27th, 7:30 p.m. at Resurrection Lutheran Church. Tickets are available at the door.
Nothing's changing, nothing's moving, except that river as she rolls home to the sea. Nothing's changing, nothing's moving, and I wonder if you ever think of me. Wait for me when the darkness is calling and the night takes the light from the day. Wait for me if I've stumbled or fallen. Wait for me if I lose my way. ¶¶
much that we have forgotten. There's so much we've lost on our way, and all the things we once held as golden in our hands now has rusted and decayed. Wait for me when the darkness is calling and the night takes the light from the day. Wait for me if I've stumbled or fallen. Wait for me if I lose my way. When at last this mystery's unraveled and I stand by the warmth of love's flame, and the clouds of confusion are parted, and I hear someone calling my name. Wait for me when the darkness is calling and the night takes the light from the day. Wait for me if I've stumbled or fallen. Wait for me if I lose my way. Wait for me.
Angelina, your host of Tideline on Wednesday nights, 5 to 7 on KRNN. I play a diverse mix of Americana, country roots rock, and southern swamp stomp. I often have musicians stop by for a chat and a song in the studio. That's Tideline Wednesday nights, 5 to 7 on KRNN 102.7.
To get the latest news, audio and text of stories, images, and videos, as well as the latest newscasts, check out our new website at k2news.org. In addition to greatly expanded content, you can also now post comments online after each story, as well as listen to archived audio from our weekly locally produced public affairs shows. Again, that's all the latest news and more at k2news.org.
Time is 3:58, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley Knock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Stavis listens on K201 88.1. K220 BT Sarsuna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with Odette Edgar and Susan Alexander about Sunday's Community Garden Harvest Fair. Also, singer-songwriter Buddy Taylor will be here with a preview of the Saturday night concert. We'll help the Alaskan Brewery celebrate 25 years of operation as they roll out their Perseverance Brew. And Nancy Duterney from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council will be here with news and views about local activities during Arts Up. At Writer's Almanac Music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with scattered showers, patchy fog later on. Mostly cloudy skies and patchy fog continuing for tomorrow morning and a slight chance of rain tomorrow evening. Friday looks like rain is in the forecast, and Saturday cloudy skies with a chance of rain. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to a Juneau afternoon today, and have a pleasant evening.